Welcome and Happy New Year. I'm Kevin Orrick, and today I have with me someone that I've really wanted our clients and friends to hear for years. Drew Kroll has been the numismatist and the backbone of all the coin buying and selling for the firm for 31 years. You've been with the McIlvaineys now, Drew, for really just about all of your adult life.
Well, I really have. Just to put things in perspective, Kevin, when I first met the McIlvaineys family, David was 5 or 6 years old.
Well, and Drew, I've worked with you for 27 years, and you know, we've seen some interesting things. And so to keep it short today, though, I think there's a reason why we're doing this for the first time, actually, in the 31 years that you've been with the McIlvaineys family. And the reason is we're sort of seeing a deja vu of something that we had happen 15, 16 years ago that we still look back and go, wow, that was a huge blessing for the firm. And so you got a call a couple of weeks ago, and you jumped on a plane to Europe, and there's a reason you jumped on the plane to Europe, contrary to what the gold price has been doing this year. The actual supply of physical metal has been drying up, especially the coins that are most desirable. So why don't you let the listeners know what occurred a couple of weeks ago and where we're at right now?
Kevin, I thought maybe I might just give you a quick background on the period of time, 1998-1999, back when the Bank of England was liquidating a great deal of gold. They had determined that gold was a barbaric relic, that it really wasn't worth anything, that they were looking across the fence to the grass that was so much greener, and the U.S. Treasury bonds and bills were paying, wow, several percent. And they were missing out on making money on their reserves. So they decided to liquidate gold at $350 an ounce.
Well, you know, we talked at the time, Drew, that it's got to either be bad timing or genius. It turned out to be bad timing.
Truly, I just can't imagine selling your most valuable asset at its low. But nonetheless, against the warnings of people like Don McIlvaineys and others at the time, they continued liquidating these coins. And we enjoyed being able to purchase literally tens of thousands of small fractional European gold coins from 12, 13 different countries. Fascinating. Finland, Sweden, Denmark, Germany, Russia, Netherlands, just the list goes on. And many of our investors will remember the opportunities they had during the 98 to perhaps 2003-04 period when they were able to buy almost at will anything that came along that was of interest to them.
Well, I know we were very happy to do that at the time. It wasn't because we thought gold necessarily was going to quadruple after that, but because gold still represented a better buy than the dollar. Now, that's the same case now, only things have changed. The banks are not selling gold. We got to the middle 2000s, and we found out that the banks didn't want to sell us any more gold. They wanted to accumulate. They became net accumulators of gold.
And that's so true. Not only the banks, Kevin, but also individuals. Individuals in Europe have been selling gold up until the last several years, primarily because of the success of the euro, or at least its initial success. Its gain against the dollar really kind of masked the fact that it was a paper asset and that its value against gold was somewhat hidden as far as its evaluation. So at any rate, they were ready sellers up until about 2 or 3 years ago. And now instead of being able to buy freely in Europe, we're actually competing with the very people that used to sell us the gold. Now they're buying the gold. So you're exactly right. It is much, much more difficult to buy these coins.
Well, we're also competing against the Russians. We're competing against the Chinese, the Indians. I mean, that seems to be where gold's going. Now, with that in mind, okay, again, bringing up the fact that gold has dropped this year, that's we've talked about this many times on the commentary, that has been mainly in the paper markets, the actual physical markets, the demand. We've never seen demand of this scale. So you've had difficulty being able to find enough supply for our clients of those types of coins, which are barterable, private, you know, something that's not a kilo bar. Now, you got a call a couple of weeks ago. Let's go ahead and go to that, because we were in a sort of a crisis of not being able to buy enough product, and then something opened up.
Our supplies had gone from thousands of coins at a time to literally just hundreds or dozens of coins at a time, and you're exactly right. We got a call just out of the blue. And I say out of the blue, we've been doing business in Europe for quite some time now, and one of our lead suppliers, one of our best suppliers in Europe, gave us a call and said that they had just been offered a very significant gold hoard. And it was represented as a gold hoard that involved Krugerrands, and some of the most interesting of all coins for us would be the English sovereign and several coins from other countries. But mainly it was just too large to buy at one time, and he suggested that we come over right away. It was great urgency. He said, if you're interested at all, that you should come right away. The quality is most unusual, very high quality. And, you know, Kevin, I'll be honest with you. I have to say I was a bit skeptical. Over the last several years, I've been called into several larger deals, not hoards, but a little bit larger deals. And without exception, I've been very disappointed in the quality of the coins. They just are not what we were used to back in the heyday of being able to buy those mint bags of coins from the banks and that kind of thing. So I did get on the plane. I went rushing over. And it was with a bit of skepticism that I sat down to look at what was then about 10,000 coins. And Kevin, I got to tell you, I was amazed. This was the finest, largest deal of British sovereigns that I've seen in 12, 13 years.
Well, you know what it reminds me of, Drew? Because you're like a kid in a candy store if you can find something nice enough for your quality. And our family just went to see the Hobbit movie here over the last, well, I saw you at the movie theater.
That's right.
But, you know, the dragon was laying on just piles and piles and
Absolutely.
Piles of gold. And I think that's maybe what you're explaining here, except for what makes this different is this is something that wasn't available to us 3 weeks ago.
Correct.
But it became available to us.
It's absolutely true. I don't even know where to begin with this because it really kind of blew my mind on several levels.
Well, Drew, over the last 12 months or so, we have had multiple meetings as to how to solve the problem. And so with you coming into these coins, why don't you explain a little bit of the dynamic? Where are they coming from? Why are they coming available? And what did you do about it?
Well, to be honest, I didn't know where they were coming from, except from our supplier. You know, I just showed up at their office. I was in a small, secure room. And there I was grading for hour after hour after hour these 10,000 coins, which, you know, just the quantity of it was pretty overwhelming. But again, I have to stress that it's not just the quantity of coins, it's the quality of the coins. Kevin, you know that, you know, I've been called a lot of names over the years, persnickety and, you know, as far as the grading, very conservative. So even though there might be a quantity of coins available, I'm still always very, very careful in just selecting coins that would be appropriate for our investors. And our investors have become very seasoned and they understand the difference between an uncirculated coin and the value that that represents, or at least an almost uncirculated or commercially uncirculated coin, particularly in the older varieties.
So how many did you keep of this 10,000 or so coins that you looked at?
Well, it ended up I kept 2,700, which was the most I've been able to buy out of any one group in a long, long time.
So not quite a third.
Not quite a third. But again, I don't want to dismiss, you know, how significant the deal was. It's just that we're that picky. So the 2,700 coins absolutely fit our criteria and our grade, and I know that our investors would be amazingly happy with them.
Well, what kind of coins were you looking at? I mean, give me an idea of some of the main ones. I know
okay.
British sovereigns.
Well, they are the first part of this hoard. They are the most interesting part of this hoard. There are actually five different varieties of sovereigns.
Okay.
Queen Victoria was on the throne for such a long time, there's actually three different renditions or heads of Queen Victoria sovereigns. There's an early head, there's a crown jubilee head, and then finally a veiled head, which leads us into the Edwards, King Edwards, the Eddies that we call them, in the early 1900s, and then finally the Georges, which began in 1911 through 32. But all of them put together, they were all there, all five varieties. And that's really one of the things that got me most motivated.
Well, and I think we should add too, Drew, we are not recommending highly rare collectible coins here. What we're talking about is something that's near bullion price, but maybe could still be considered a collectible in the eyes of some that may also be considered a collectible type of coin, yet still close to the price of gold.
Absolutely true. All five qualify for that particular criteria. The earliest ones are still incredible condition. They're what we call almost uncirculated, or even, Kevin, what the industry might consider to be commercial uncirculated, just a notch off of brilliant uncirculated condition. And these coins are from the mid to late 1800s, and it's just phenomenal just how beautiful they are and what lovely state of condition they're still in. And when we get into the kings began in 1902, And there we become even more strict in our grading. So the only coins of the kings that we have selected for our investors are all brilliant uncirculated.
Which qualifies for the storage programs. I mean, we've had storage programs in Toronto for people who want to have some of their coins outside of the country. Zurich is another place we can put them. But the only coins that qualify are certain types of coins. And these, by the tube, you know, if a person has a tube of them, they can be delivered to their house or to Toronto or Zurich. And I know that that was part of the qualification of what you were looking for.
Exactly right. You know, with as diverse as our investors have become over these recent years, it is important that they maintain the ability to store their coins where it is safe, where they're out of the reach of our particular government's domain, and yet they're readily available. So you're exactly right. Our storage facilities include domestic in the United States, Toronto in Canada, and of course Zurich in Switzerland.
And I know you were telling me that as you learned more about this hoard, I mean, you looked at the 10,000, you kept 2,700 out, and then you found out maybe there's a little bit more behind the curtain.
There was a big piece of this puzzle that got dropped on me at the end. You're exactly right.
But we also found out, and this was sort of sad, we lost the first tranche of this deal to a Russian buyer.
Oh, Kevin.
And we would have loved to have looked at that as well.
I really was so disappointed when I got there and found out that there was a piece of this hoard that, because it was so large and it represented so much money, that he was forced to make a quick decision.
The seller.
Our supplier, who was actually receiving these coins. And so he did the expedient thing, but not the wisest thing. And so the first tranche, the first group of these coins, as I found out later, was simply moved immediately to Russia.
And you looked at the second tranche,
I did.
Little did you know there were more.
There were more behind it.
Okay.
So
okay.
After I had finished grading all these coins and buying the ones that we wanted, there was a very strange grin on our supplier's face. He looked a little like the cat who'd swallowed the canary, because there was something else that he had up his sleeve, and I didn't know what it was.
I'll tell you, you coin buyers and sellers, you're all card players.
There's some
he wasn't going to reveal it until he saw what you did.
That's right. He wanted to see how we did. He wanted to see what percentage that we would keep. He wanted to see what the price was that we would negotiate and that kind of thing, which had all been done. And then he let me know that I'd just looked at the second of five installments on this one hoard. And again, you have to understand that I'm looking at a small percentage of it, because the coins that we would be interested in for our investors aren't bullion coins. They aren't just run-of-the-mill coins.
Right. You didn't buy any of the Krugerrands, because we can buy those anywhere.
No. Yeah. Didn't buy anything like that. And, of course, there's a great deal of value in all that, but it wasn't the type of coin that we've learned that will end up, I'm sure, being the coin to own in the future. Be that as it may, over dinner, he lets this be known that there are three other tranches or three other pieces of this hoard, and wanted to know if I could come back the next week.
Which would have been Christmas.
It was the 23rd of December. And I said, well, you know, as interested as I am in this, you know, we're going to have to postpone it a week. So as you know, I'm to leave here in 2 days and go and look at yet the next group of these coins. But I'm equally excited, or actually more excited now, because I really do know that the coins exist. I really do know they exist in this quality. And I'm very excited about continuing our purchasing of them. The question that I had, and he was a little bit more forthcoming after dinner, I just kind of wondered, you know, where is this coming from? What is the source of these coins? Because this is clearly not an investor. This is not just a haphazard somebody walking in with this kind of quantity of gold.
Well, you had an idea that it was a bank, didn't you? I mean, in the back of your mind,
the
coins being kept uncirculated in that quantity.
Had to be. It turns out, he said that this is from a Eastern European bank.
Okay.
They have been in their reserves or in their bank vaults for at least 50 years, and he thinks a good bit longer than that. And they were held as reserves, as part of the bank's reserves. And what they were doing, they were in the gold lease business, where they had their reserves and they were able to lease it out to make a marginal interest rate and make something on their assets.
That's a business that many of our listeners may not understand occurs, but it's one of the reasons why the paper markets can manipulate price, because people who buy contracts are assuming they can take delivery on gold if they want to, but most don't. And those who do take delivery, they a lot of times will lease that gold from one of these types of banks.
Exactly.
But the interest
that
they can earn in it is not that high anymore.
Frankly, it's not profitable anymore, or it hasn't been over the last 2 or 3 years particularly. Not only has our Fed, the Federal Reserve, kept interest rates internationally artificially low, but the price of gold has been dropping.
Mm-hmm.
So you couple those two things together, and this bank made the decision that they would no longer participate in this sort of loan. So without the need for the bank to hold the gold reserves, they've decided to go into some other kind of loaning business that they think will be more profitable for them. So they have, in turn, liquidated their entire gold holdings.
Which is amazing because, you know, when we were talking about the Bank of England back 15 years ago and taking advantage of their bad timing, it seems that we're doing this again with another bank. And one thing that you can definitely say about bank timing is it's almost always wrong. I mean, you know, when England sold their gold, I mean, that's been mocked ever since because the clients who bought that gold from us back 15 years ago, I mean, it's quadrupled even with the correction that gold has come down. Drew, let me ask you a question, though. And again, owning gold isn't necessarily always a price speculation. I mean, we can't determine price on a day-to-day basis. We can't predict it. But with the amount of money printing that's going on right now, and with the timing of this gold coming available, like the timing of the gold that came available during the Bank of England days, what are your thoughts over the next couple of years in the gold market?
Well, Kevin, I think we're looking at the same situation that we were back when the Bank of England liquidated their gold. I think it's a very ill-advised time to be selling gold. It's a great time to be purchasing gold. I think that one of the most powerful pieces of information that I've come across in recent years was something that Jim Sinclair, a very noted, very renowned gold trader from the 70s, he was explaining how he had pegged the high in gold, the top price of gold in 1980. He said that it should top out about $800. And when it reached that point, he started selling his positions. And everybody thought he was crazy at that point because they thought gold was going to the moon. But we know the story, and gold did correct from there. And it's only been in the last couple of years that he's revealed how he arrived at that number. And Kevin, he took all the monetary aggregate of the entire industrialized nation. That would be money in the system, currency, loans, treasury bills, you know, all that kind of monetary aggregate. And then he simply divided it by the known ounces of gold. And it came up at that time to be about $800.
Huh. So it's a simple calculation.
It's a very, very simple calculation. So simple that it makes tremendous sense. Well, of course, the question then is, how about today?
Right.
What is the size and scope of the monetary aggregate out there today? If you did the same calculation, if you took all the monetary aggregates of the industrialized nations and divided it by the price of gold 2 years ago, the price would be
$12,500.
$12,500, which is why he's been so bullish on the price of gold. And you understand that the monetary aggregates have ballooned since then.
Mm.
So I think that some of the projections of $3,000 to $5,000 on gold are not unrealistic at all. They may be conservative, but just as we saw the price of gold quadruple after the Bank of England liquidated their gold, I think you could very seriously see a quadrupling of the price of gold today, which would take it to about the $5,000 level, again, with horrible timing on a bank's part to be liquidating.
Well, Drew, I want to thank you for joining us today and telling us the story. And for those listeners who are interested in more information about this, give us a call at 800-525-9556. We'll be happy to send you some information. Or if you also look at the attached flyer, if you've received this in the form of an email, that will also explain in more detail.
Kevin, I do want to share with you that we have carefully put together several levels of packages so that our investors can enjoy each and every one of these five varieties of the sovereigns. So I encourage them to take a look and see how they can buy as little as five each of the Victorias and the Edwards or the Georges, or perhaps a tube each of these particular coins. So when this particular hoard, when these coins are gone, we're going to be faced with the exact situation we were in just several weeks ago. Where are we going to get any product? So this isn't an ongoing deal. This is a one-time, one-shot opportunity to buy from this particular hoard.
Well, thank you, Drew, and safe travels.